This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier.
What's up, Tom?
Hello, John. Early morning this morning.
I know. Well, we're going to have to ask him what he does early this morning because we just had a big night game last night.
Yeah, we did.
A walk-off. We are recording this on Tuesday.
Right.
So this is after a big walk-off home run by Bryson Stott.
Not quite walk-off. Almost.
Not walk-off. Sorry.
We needed three outs.
Yes, you're right. So a big... Yes, game-changing home run by Bryson Stott.
Yeah, but we have Rob Thompson with us, our manager. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing great. Great to be here, fellas.
You know, we had Sam Fold on last month, and it was after a big win. And I just the first question was, how much better is winning than losing?
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, and we came out of the break, and we lost three in a row to the Cubs. And so last night was just a huge win. It really was.
I mean, baseball is such a game of momentum, right? So we before the All-Star break, you go down to Miami. The Marlins have always been a notoriously tough opponent for us,
yeah,
right?
Thorn on our side.
Thorn on our side, yeah. But, you know, we sweep. And then we go to the All-Star break feeling great. Then you get swept by a team that's, 20 games under 500. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you come back and beat one of the best pitchers in the game, right, on a home run by a young player.
Yeah, it's just the ebbs and flows of the season because prior to the Miami series, we had lost four in a row. And so we were, you know, we went into that series and played really well, and we pitched really well. So you get the momentum. All of a sudden the break hits, you get 4 days off, come out of the break, and you're kind of flat, kind of rusty, lose three in a row to a team that arguably you should beat. But so last night was, again, it was just huge.
And it's got to be exciting, too, with all the young players. And they've been doing it all year. But really, since you've kind of taken over, you see guys like, you know, Bryson Stott last night. You see Matt Vierling. You see Derek Hall. You see, Garrett Stubbs with some great moments. So it's got to be very exciting for you, especially someone from a player development background, to see these young guys perform well.
Yeah, it's really neat, you know, because, like you said, I spent a lot of years, 16 years in player development. So my goal always as a coach, manager, field coordinator, farm director was to see our young guys go to the big leagues. And so now I sit in this chair and it's just fantastic seeing these guys come and then they perform and they bring this energy level that, you know, the veterans sometimes don't have because they've been around it and they, you know, they're used to it. But these guys come in here and they just inject energy across the board. They're performing. Stott is doing great. Vierling is really playing well. Derek Hall has had some big hits for us. It's just so infectious. And Nick Maton, when he came up, did great things for us. So it's really neat. Kudos to our player development system. And these guys have come up here and they're relaxed now and they're used to it and they're playing well.
Yeah, nice. And you mentioned the All-Star game, and not that you would use it as an excuse, but can it be a momentum killer some seasons? Have you seen that before?
Yeah, I've seen it where it's worked both ways. You go into the break and come out of it and kind of down, you're kind of rusty. I've also seen it where the break just gives everybody rest, and they come out and they're refreshed, and off we go. And we came out of the break 1 year in New York and won 8 or 9 in a row. You know, and we were really scuffling up to that point. So you never know what's going to happen, but, I hope we're on a upward trend now.
Yeah.
Rob, you've had a great career, and I love how people's journey, right? Because baseball, sometimes, you know, you're a great player, you step into something, sometimes you're a minor league guy, never make it to the majors, and there's sometimes you go through player development, some guys just get into coaching right away. You know, let's go back in time. You grew up in Sarnia, right, Ontario,
Canada,
which is,
yeah.
I guess, close to Detroit,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
Closer to Detroit than Toronto.
That's correct, yeah.
So I guess my first question is, growing up, were you more of a Tigers fan, or were you more of Tigers than Blue Jays?
Tiger fan. Well, when I was growing up, the Blue Jays didn't even exist.
Oh, right, obviously. Oh.
So I was always a Tiger fan. My father was always a Tiger fan, our whole family. And so we were an hour from old Tiger Stadium, so often we'd drive down and catch a Tigers game, sit in the upper deck and you know, have something to eat and watch Mickey Lolich and Al Kaline and Willie Horton and all those great players of the past. And that's kind of, you know, where I fell in love with the game.
In that old stadium, too. That was a barn.
It was great. It really was.
And when you're up top there, you're really up top,
right? Oh, yeah,
right?
And it's downhill.
Yeah.
If you want to go down and get something to eat.
Now, you're also, I grew up playing ice hockey. I played mites, squirts, peewees, you know, bantams all the way through high school. So you did the same thing, right?
So winter was hockey. And then summer was baseball. So I played hockey until I was 16 or 17 years old. And then I chose to do the baseball route, and it worked out. Went to junior college in Port Huron, Michigan, and then I went to the University of Kansas, and then I was drafted in 1985.
And you had a couple older brothers, older brothers who were into baseball. Your one brother was, I guess, drafted by the Expos, right?
Yeah, so at that time, Canadians couldn't get drafted, so he would sign actually as kind of a free agent. But he got to Double A, and he was kind of a backup catcher all the way through. He only played 1 year. And then he got released, and it was just something he wanted to try and see. And, you know, he went back and got his engineering degree, and now he's retired, but he had three companies and very successful. So, two older brothers, I was always the bat boy. My father was a coach and so, you know, the game was just part of my life.
Yeah, were you the younger brother? You're getting dragged to games, and you know you're
being teased and go get me a hot dog and go pick up that ball over there and grab the bat. Yeah,
yeah,
I was the guy.
Could you have gone the hockey career?
No.
You're a better baseball player than a hockey player.
I was a stay-at-home defenseman that I could check, and at that time you could fight back then when you were kids. But I wasn't very talented.
I tell you what, you know, growing up in Philadelphia playing hockey, we had a home-and-home series with a team from Mississauga, Arendelle, I think the team was called. And I just remember just going up to Canada. That's, you know, when you grew up in Philadelphia playing hockey, you're like, oh my God, that's the Mecca, right?
Yeah, sure.
Canadian.
Still is.
We're totally intimidated playing against Canadian teams.
Well, John's real claim to fame is because we grew up here, Rob, and the Broad Street Bullies were our team, and John has had the opportunity to play with those guys in some of the alumni games.
Yeah, I play like 5-6 times with the Flyers alumni, and I'm the only non-NHL guy in there, so I'm trying to keep quiet, and I was totally intimidated. And then I started, the more you get out there with Joe Watson and Brian Propp and all those guys, so much fun.
You ever drop the gloves with Schulte?
No,
but Dave Schulte didn't drop them.
But I did play with Dave one time. And what happens is you play against these all-star men's league teams, right? And when they see Dave Schulte out there, what do they want to do? They want to try to pick a fight with Dave Schulte so they can go to the bar the next day or go to work and say, I got in a fight in a hockey game against Dave Schulte. And Dave Schulte, from his perspective, he'd come off the bench and say, I'm going to kill these guys. I'm going to have to stop because I literally might kill somebody.
Did you like those teams?
I did.
The Flyer teams back then?
Because that was kind of my type of hockey. Now, growing up, I was a Toronto Maple Leaf fan.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy watching the Flyers because, Bobby Clark was a great player. Rick McLeish. They played the game tough. A little dirty at times, but I don't mind that sometimes. So.
Yeah, he had like Borja Salming,
right.
He had like this, this great skater, this and that. Yes. And then you get the Joe Watsons and the Dave Schulte and the Bob Kelly. Like just beating on people.
That's right. I remember playing the Flyers in the playoffs 1 year. The Leafs playing the Flyers in the playoffs, obviously. And they just eliminated Salming. They every time he touch the puck, they just beat him up. That was that was the end of it. They just rolled over. They just rolled over the Leafs.
Well, I love the story when the Flyers played. We've had Joe Watson, we've had Bernie Perron on our podcast. When we played we were one of the last teams to play against the Russian, the Red Army.
And they walked off the ice.
They did. Yeah. Ed Van Imp gave somebody like a hip check, like right, just knocked him down.
And then
Joe told the story that Ed Snyder went in there and said, "You're not getting paid if you guys don't get out there, play the rest of this game."
Yep.
And obviously they wanted to get paid and they came out there and it was great. I think the Flyers were one of the few teams to beat the Red Army.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I remember watching that game on TV because they did this, a circuit, I guess. They played Montreal and Toronto and Philly and the Rangers. I forget who they played, but I think Philly was maybe the only team that beat them.
I think so.
And the interesting thing, too, on that is that Fred Shiro actually went over to Russia and learned techniques of like what the Russians did. So he was well versed on, how the Russians, played. And they just skated circles and they just moved the puck quickly.
Sure.
And the Flyers basically just kind of stood at that blue line and basically, just beat the heck out of them.
That's right. One way to do it.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Build a wall.
Hey, Rob, you're wearing your KU shirt today, and we're talking about your history and what do you remember from those years? I mean, great school, great tradition, right?
Yeah, really great school and basketball school, obviously. Our baseball team wasn't that good, but we had good players and we had good coaching and we played in a really tough. It was the Big Eight then, and Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, they were fantastic, and we just couldn't get over the hump. But great schooling. I had a wonderful time. I have a lot of friends there, still keep in touch and visit. I like to go in the winter and see a basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse. And if you haven't done that, you need to put that on your bucket list because that's a fantastic.
Yeah, that's right up there with Cameron and Pauley Pavilion
and the Palestra.
And the Palestra, right.
Yeah.
Do you still have the highest single season batting average record?
I'm not sure. You'd have to look that up.
But, you never trust Wikipedia, but it still says you hold the school record. So.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It also said in Wikipedia that you pitched one game. I guess after you went to Detroit, got drafted by the Tigers and was in their system, but third base catching, but also you pitched a game.
Well, it was one of those games that we were getting blown out.
Okay.
Just let me do it and I'll.
Your teammates said, did you get voted to be the guy who's going to pitch that?
I think I went to the manager and said, look, we're out of this game. If you need somebody to pitch, just let me pitch, and I'll turn the lights out when we're done.
And how'd you do? Did you do okay?
I don't really remember. I don't really remember. But.
And this is the part too. Like I love the journey. Again, we talked about it earlier. So in '88, you stop. You realize that's probably not your career. Was it somebody that nudged you into coaching? Was it somebody that that was did you have a mentor that said Rob, I think you ought to I think you'd make a good coach. That'd be a good career. Or did you just fall into it? How did that happen?
Well, back then in the minor leagues, each team had a manager, and that's it. There's no pitching coach, no hitting coach, no extra coach. So the manager had to do it all. And so it was in spring training, and I was on the double-A roster, and I got sent back to the A-ball roster. And I knew, I could evaluate then, and I'm looking around, and I knew that I didn't have a shot here. There was a bunch of younger guys that were running circles around me. So I went into Joe McDonald, who was the farm director at the time, and told him, I've just been married, and I think it's time for me to hang it up. And he said, well, before you leave, please come back and see me. So I went back, and he asked me if I wanted to be the first Detroit Tiger extra coach in their system. Hmm. Because we had a manager, his name was Johnny Lippon, who had been in the game for years. And he was, I don't know how old Johnny would be at the time, but he was probably in his 60s, maybe late 60s. And he needed help with throwing batting practice and hitting fungos and things like that. So I guess Joe had talked to Johnny, and Johnny had coached me before, and so we knew each other, and so he agreed to take me on, and that's where I got my start. And so I was in the Florida State League that year and went to double-A the next year with Chris Chambliss, former Yankee and great player. And I spent a year there, and then I went to the Yankees, and I was with the Yankees for...
Now, who brought you over from the Yankees?
Actually, Dick Roach. So it's a good story. The year I was in the Eastern League in AA, at the end of the year, they were trying to expand the game globally. And so the Eastern League sent kind of an all-star team and a bunch of coaches to Russia to do camps and things like that just to grow the game. And so I went to Russia. I represented the Tigers, and one of the people that went from the Yankees was Dick Roach, who was my junior college coach. He's the guy that signed Derek Jeter. And so we were talking, and he was asking me, you know, what I made and did I enjoy it and blah, blah, blah. And so by the time I got back, I'd gotten a phone call from George Bradley with the Yankees, and he asked me to come. And I got permission from Joe McDonald, and then I went to the Yankees and never came back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, in player development for them. And then it's great. I guess it must have been exciting for you to then get back into the dugout and on the field. I think, first base coach. I was going to ask you, too, if you're a player development guy and you have that background, if you're going to be on the field, is first base a good place? I always think, like, a guy comes up, he gets a hit. Now, this is a guy you might know. Now you're on first base. Do you have that conversation like, hey, you had a good – you're evaluating that at bat? Is that a good opportunity there to do that when you're on the field like that?
Well, I guess if you're the hitting coach. Like, I like to stay in my lane. So if I'm not the hitting coach, I don't talk to the hitters.
Yeah.
But if you're the first base coach, now the responsibility is running the bases. So you might talk about a guy's move. You remind them of the outs, where the outfielders are playing, what the situation in the game is, that type of thing. So, I think every job has a lot of value. And if you really take pride in that job, if you really like Paco Figueroa for us, he takes great pride in being a first base coach, and he's tremendous at it. So he knows pitchers' moves down to a T. He knows what to talk to the guys about when they get to first base, about the outfield arms and where they're positioned and what the situation is. And let's be aggressive going first to third right here. Make sure you don't make a third out at third base. Those types of little keys. Whatever job you have, if you take pride in it, there's a lot of things to do.
Yeah, we had Dusty on a few weeks ago, and same, you can just tell. I mean, Dusty, you know, we had him on right after there was a big play that he was a big
perfect
part
timing,
of.
Yeah.
But great example, I guess, Dusty at third base and knowing, you know, the outfielders and knowing the guy's speed. And
yeah, and Dusty's another guy that takes great pride in it, and he's... Yeah. Yeah, I've said ever since the first time I met Dusty, I said this guy should manage in the big leagues, and I truly believe that. I mean, he's had so much success at the minor league level. He's managed so many games. He is great with young players. He's great with the veterans. He knows the game. He knows the rules. He needs to get a shot.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now, in 2008, Joe Girardi gets the job with the Yankees, hires you to be the third base coach, I believe.
No, it was bench coach.
Bench coach, because then he went third base, then he went back to the bench coach.
Yeah.
So you had a long career. You followed Joe Girardi the whole tenure at the Yankees. What was coaching under Joe like?
It was great, and So
except for when you beat us in 2009.
Yeah. Right. We got to kind of get by that somehow. We're going to get by it.
But Joe's the type of guy that lets me do my job, and all I'm trying to do is make sure that we're organized on a daily basis. So I set the schedule as a bench coach, and then make sure that everybody's prepared, including the coaches, the players, and then just be able to give the manager as much information as I can during the game and throw ideas at him, and whatever he takes, he takes. Whatever he doesn't want, that's fine. But I got to keep coming with ideas and information just to make sure that he's prepared, and I just got to take care of him. And it was great because Joe just let me do my thing, you know, and I did all the prep work and all the organizing, and I loved it.
And there's just got to be such a trust factor, right? Yeah. Especially when someone, you're aligned with somebody. And, you know, to talk about, too, the difference of, you mentioned bench coach. Bench coach, you're basically like the informational officer, right? You're getting all the input. And then you go to third base, and that's a different, you know, where you're, again, studying the outfielders, you're studying the speed, you're waving people through, you're doing a lot of signs, right? So I imagine bench coach is probably more, did you like that more, or did you like both the same?
I really like coaching third base because I felt like I was like kind of the 10th guy on the field. Cause a lot of times third base coach has more decisions to make than the manager does. Hmm. Just with base runners and things. And you're right out there in front of 40,000 people making decisions, you know? So, I like that aspect of it. I really felt energized when I was coaching third base. But I also like the bench coach side of it too, where it's information, it's looking at film, looking at the computer and watching, you know, who runs, who doesn't run, bunt plays, pickoff moves, all that stuff. So I like both sides of it, but, you know, being a third base coach, I really enjoyed it because it's exciting.
Well, you were the third base coach in 2009. Let's get it out of the way. And you must have great memories from that season. Going into that series against the Phillies, what'd you think? Did you think it was going to be a great series? I hope you were scared of the Phillies a little bit and Charlie Manuel's club.
I thought it was going to be a great series. I really did. And the first game, I think Cliff Lee started game one and really pitched well. And I
Chase Utley obviously had a good game too.
And they had a great club. And so I felt after the first game, I was a little bit nervous because we didn't hit. But we won the second game. And so we took the train over here. And I always tell this story. We took the train over here from New York on an off day. So we went to Penn Station, I guess it is. And, you know, there's playoffs, World Series. We got 12 buses, you know, all the front office people and all the families. And so we pull up to Madison Square Garden, and there must be 5,000 people there with Yankee hats on, and they're all cheering. And so we go down and get on the train. We go over to Philadelphia. We come out, and there's 5,000 Philly fans booing and throwing stuff at
us.
It was great, and I thought, this is baseball, you know?
Well, you know, when we the year before, we had played Tampa Bay, and it would have been, I think, they played Boston, I guess, in the ALCS, and I was like, wow, that would have been pretty cool, too, Philly and Boston. Right. So I think in 2009, we felt, we're playing the Yankees now. This is good. This is baseball.
That was baseball. It really was. It was, and it was a great series.
You had Pedro on the mound, and there was just a lot of drama in that playoff.
And I mentioned Charlie. Had your past crossed with Charlie at all when you were in the minor leagues?
No, not in the minor leagues, but you know, just being in spring training all those years and just watching him from across the field. I always had great respect for him because I could see how he ran the game, which was unbelievable, but also just his relationships with the players and how he got along with them. And so I'm always watching that stuff and so much respect. And I think he's just a tremendous man and tremendous baseball man.
So then in 2018, Gabe Kapler gets hired as our manager, brings you over. So you just went from the Yankees organization. Now you're coming and you're going to be bench coach under a first time manager.
Yep.
So what was that like, you know, you're now the experienced guy, you know, that's been there, and you're helping shepherd, guide, you know, a young manager.
Yeah, it was interesting because Gabe was such a great person. I mean, a great person. And he was another guy that just kind of let me do my thing. And he just kept saying, just tell me about what you see and what you do and how to act and how to do this and how to do that. And what he taught me was a lot of the analytic stuff. And I'm not, I think with the analytics, you have to be sort of have some balance. You know, you've got to take the human side and factor in the analytics with it. But, so he taught me a lot about that. And I think I guided him on certain things, on how to do certain things and deal with players and deal with a bullpen and things like that. So I think it was a good match, and I love Gabe. I really do.
Yeah, and then, of course, you get the big job running the club. A lot of, I guess you take from everybody you've learned, you know, from Little League to your brothers to, you know, how you are, how you handle certain situations. But you also have Joe Torre and Joe Girardi and Gabe Kapler and managers maybe who you've been around. Has that been your experience that you're just taking from everybody?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I'm one of the biggest thieves on the planet.
You have to be.
That's right. And when I was a kid, my dad said, you know, life is like you're walking through a forest and all the trees are people that you meet, and you've got this bushel basket and you take a leaf off of this tree and you take a leaf off of that tree, and they're just ideas from people and things that you see, and by the time you're through the forest, that's who you are. You know, and that's kind of the way I've lived my life, is that I just learn from people. I learn good things, I learn some bad things from people, you know, just by watching and listening and you know, just paying attention.
And I imagine as a bench coach or a third base coach, you know, you have a specific job. When you're the manager, you're the CEO. So did that give you more time to kind of build relationships with the players and kind of, you know, because you're in your own little lane when you're coaching, but when you're the manager, you're the CEO. So you're dealing with the front office, you're dealing with your own coaches, you're dealing with the players, everybody.
Yeah. So there's a lot less time preparing. So I have to rely a lot of that. I have to rely on my coaches for a lot of that. And now my job is to get out in the clubhouse and get better relationships with all the players and really get to learn, know them. And so they trust me, and we have this mutual trust. And yeah, and then there's the front office and there's, you know, the media. I kind of feel like I'm the conduit between the club and the fan base. So, you know, I take a lot of pride in that and making sure that the information is getting out, and it's getting out in a very professional way, and that there's no animosity. We just, you know, tell them what we're doing, because it's going to the fan base, and we want as many of these passionate fans in our building as we can get every night.
And I got a question just on the, you know, the bullpen. Last couple of years has been a struggle, and even in the first half of this year for a good amount. But I tell you what, since you've taken over, and I don't know whether it's coincidence or it's, you know, the players they're seeing more of a defined role, but the bullpen's just been lights out. Knock on wood, because I don't want to jinx anything. But
yeah.
But I mean, is that what do you describe? Or what do you attribute that to?
I think. We've always had good arms, and these guys are really filthy down there, every one of them. And I think we've tweaked them a little bit by putting them in different spots and understanding where they should pitch in the game, whether it's the inning or the part of the lineup that fits them best, and kind of sticking to that plan as much as you possibly can, so that they have success, so they get confidence. And also the fact that you don't want to overuse guys, but also you have to make sure that they're getting the proper innings. So you don't want a guy sitting down there for 7 days and then expect him to come in and perform. So you got to make sure that you're getting guys in the game in a timely way.
Yeah, well, it's working. Hey, Rob, I'm not sure if John told you, but you are about to be quizzed about your life.
Okay.
And, you know, this is important stuff.
Well, yeah, and before we get to the quiz, I've got a complaint here.
Go
because
ahead.
we're all the same age, and I see like maybe five gray hairs, right?
Well, you're the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, thank you. You're getting more sprinkled as we're going through this podcast here. But
I get my hair cut. I don't think I'm really that great. You go in and get your hair cut, and they always put like the black smock on you. And then by the end of it, you're looking down like, well, whose hair you've been cutting for the last 15 minutes? That's not my hair.
I know. Well, yeah, and it stinks now because when I get a haircut, they put the mirror in the back to see if the back, you know, it's cut
like
right.
The big divots
and
back
I'm
there.
Like, you know what? I never see that bald spot. I don't want to see that bald spot.
Another divot.
So congratulations on the full head of hair and the dark hair.
Come see me after the World Series.
Yeah, exactly right.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
All right, Rob. So as Tom said, I give everyone a quiz. This is the last part of your interview. It's all about your life. So you have an inside track, right? There's eight questions, multiple choice. And you have one lifeline. Tom is your lifeline. He doesn't know the questions that I'm asking.
I'm usually
so if you need
lifeline.
To use a lifeline, you can use him. But okay. He won't know anything because it's about your life. Tom, what's the bar that we set?
Got to get 6 of 8.
Rob, how old are your kids? You're probably older kids. That
31, 26.
So Fanatic Kids Books isn't going to...
Kids Books probably not gonna, you don't have any grandkids, do you?
No.
All right. Well, we'll find something. We'll drop off a little prize pack for you if you get 6 out of 8. All right. You, as we mentioned, you were born in Sarnia, Ontario, but I guess you grew up in Corunna?
Corunna, yeah.
Corunna.
Yeah.
And Sarnia, by the way, Tom, is the largest city on Lake Huron. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
So how about that? All right. So which of these celebrities were not from Sarnia? There's three celebrities that are from Sarnia, or at least spent some time, were born.
Yep.
And one had nothing to do with Sarnia.
Okay. A hotbed of celebrity is Sarnia, huh?
There is a hotbed of celebrity.
Well,
put it this way. There were so many hockey players. I could have gone, hockey, but I tried to diversify here. So, all right. A, Rick Moranis, who's, you know, comedian, actor.
Yep.
B is golfer Mike Weir, who's a 2003 Masters champ. C is curler Steve Bice. And D is Steven Stamkos, the Tampa Bay Lightning superstar. So is it Rick Moranis, Mike Weir, Steve Bice, or Steven Stamkos? Which is not has nothing to do with Sarnia?
Steven Stamkos. Well, born or nothing to
nothing
do with?
Nothing to do with Sarnia.
Okay, Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis is correct.
Dang. Well, that was a curveball you were throwing there.
What do you mean?
Well, not born, but well, had...
I knew it was Sarnia. He had either born or lived there. Had to do... And he was right there, Rick Moranis.
Rob nailed it.
He nailed it. So, all right. We mentioned that you played a couple of years at University of Kansas, where you once... we mentioned that held the record for highest single-season batting average. Still might hold that. Which of these former Phillies did not play at Kansas? Mm. Now, they might have had a cup of coffee with the Phillies, but nevertheless, they put on a Phillies big league uniform.
Good question.
I'm going to mention four former Phillies. One did not play at Kansas. Left-handed pitcher Mike Zagurski. Left-handed is A. B is left-handed pitcher Les Walrond. C is Steve Jeltz, infielder, who I think is coming in for Alumni Weekend. And D is Kevin Stocker. So you have Mike Zagurski, Les Walrond, Steve Jeltz, or Kevin Stocker?
Kevin Stocker.
Kevin Stocker, University of Washington. Did you know the other three played at Kansas?
Not the second one. I knew Jeltz and Zagurski.
I loved Mike Zagurski. Yeah. He was a great guy. All right, question. You're 2 for 2.
Yeah.
Question number three. You were drafted in the 32nd round by the Tigers in 1985. Tell you what, Tom, that 1985 draft, oh, my God, B.J. Suroff, Will Clark, Bobby Witt, Barry Larkin, Barry Bonds, I think, Inky, Walt Weiss, Brian McCray, Tommy Green, Joe McGreen, Craig Jeffries, Rafael Palmeiro, Joey Cora, David Justice,
really?
Tino Martinez, I mean, Bobby Thigpen, I mean, on and on. That was a That was a great draft.
Oh, yeah.
Are you saying Rob would have been a first rounder?
I think I would have. Yes. All those guys were eliminated.
Right. That's my point right there.
That is a good point.
But who wasn't drafted that year in 1985? One of these guys was not drafted that year. So, again, this is adding to the – there's three guys that are going to add to that big list.
Go ahead.
Randy Johnson – I mentioned Tommy Green. Randy Johnson, Tommy Green, Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds. Two of them I think I mentioned
they
already.
Did.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't expected to go through.
You showed
the
your
list.
Hand right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so I guess basically it comes down to, was Randy Johnson or Mark McGwire?
I think it was Randy Johnson.
Was
Not.
No, Mark McGwire was really? 84. Yeah, Randy Johnson was that year too. I mean, what a draft that was.
Wow. Oh, my.
Yeah. All right. You're all right. Your first minor league team was the Gastonia Jets, I believe.
Yeah. Well, Bristol,
one of the first.
Bristol, yeah. I was in Bristol first.
Bristol and then went to Gastonia, right? Who was not a teammate in Gastonia that year? Ricky Cusack, Scott Brandreth, Ken Hill, Dave Meads.
The second guy.
Scott Brandreth?
Yeah. The second guy. He's our director of promotion.
That's our merch guy. Yeah. So in a couple of years when there's a Rob Thompson bobblehead doll, yeah. he's the one.
He got a little shout out.
Yeah. All right, 3 for 4. That's good. You're batting .750. Here you go. All right, number 5. You managed the 1995 Oneonta, did I say that right?
Yep.
Oneonta Yankees, short season A in Oneonta, New York. Who was not on that team? Mike Lowell, Frankie Garland, Luke Wilcox, Tom Becker.
Second guy.
Frankie Garland, who's our lawyer. All right. You're going to get to know all these guys now, right? Through these quiz. All right. You are 4 for 5. 3 more. When you became manager, you should get this one because it was all over the news. When you became manager this year, you became the first Canadian manager since this guy. Was it Bob Gibson, George Gibson, Mel Gibson, or Josh Gibson?
George Gibson.
George Gibson is correct. Gibson, 1920 to 22. And speaking of that, too, that must have been pretty cool because you were the first Canadian manager to manage in
Canada.
First manager from Canada to manage in Canada.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Were there tons of Canadian media?
Yeah, there was quite a few. And, like, I didn't see it as that big of a deal, but they did, and that was fine. And I had a bunch of family and friends there, so it was good.
Nice. Good.
Nice.
All right, you're on a roll. I think you're one answer away from qualifying here.
Correct.
Number 7, JT Realmuto's uncle is a 2-time Olympic gold medal winner, world champion. He was actually one of the best wrestlers of all time, right?
Yep.
Just accolade. Did you know that, Tom?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, John. I just gave the answer. John Smith. You know what? You're going to get this because I was going to say John. Who was the uncle? John Cena, Hulk Hogan, Bill Goldberg, or John Smith? You would have gotten that one right.
Yeah.
All right. There
it's
you
early
go.
In the morning.
It is early in the morning. I've only had one coffee. All right. Last one, Rob. And this is my favorite one. The Fanatic, since Tom is the best friend of the Fanatic had a spy on the Dodgers back in the 80s who would sneak a Tommy Lasorda jersey out of the clubhouse and give it to the Fanatic so he could put it on a doll and then the Fanatic would abuse the doll. And Tommy Lasorda
loved it.
Tommy Lasorda would go completely nuts. I don't know if you ever saw the Fanatic. He actually fought the Fanatic one time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was one player on the Dodgers who would literally sneak, say, Fanatic, here's the jersey.
Don't tell anybody I gave it to you.
Right? So let's see if you can guess who that was. Was that Dodger Oral Hershiser, Pedro Guerrero, Steve Sachs, or Dusty Baker?
I would say Steve Sachs.
Yeah, Steve Sachs is correct.
That's a good one, Rob.
Did you say that because you know Steve Sachs?
No.
That would be part of the...
I thought it was either going to be Sachs or there was another guy on the club that was kind of a...
Wacko?
Yeah, funny guy.
Right.
Did a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
He went 7 for 8.
Yeah, it's
pretty
not bad,
good.
Rob. Very right. well
Anybody
done.
Anybody ever go 8 for 8?
Yes, I think we had Mike Tolan.
I think Ruben.
Ruben did it too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Stanford guy trying to show
Stanford.
Off.
Well, thanks, Rob, for being our guest. John was complaining that it's way too early in the morning. It's like, yeah, and it's like, well, what's Rob? You know, why is he getting here? All you got to do is fill out a lineup card.
I mean, wait.
Why does that take?
I didn't say that.
Oh, yeah, I might have said that.
You said
what? To take 8 hours to fill out a lineup card?
Well,
or here at 9 in the morning.
He's wondering what you had to do to be be the best friend of the Fanatic. So.
Nothing. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Let's keep the good times going, Rob. Yeah, we're looking forward to the second half of the season.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
All right, thanks, Rob, and we'll be back right after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Philly's backstage. John, that was great. That's the first time we've had a sitting manager on our podcast.
That is true. He was sitting, too.
He was the sitting manager.
Yeah, and I think he's a little upset, too, that you questioned why he needs to be in so early, because all you have to do is fill out a lineup card. So that might be the last time we get a sitting manager.
Well, it looks like he gets a workout in. I wanted to ask him, like, oh, what are you going to do for the next, you know,
yeah, he just said he's going to go work out.
Yeah.
And then he gets to work.
And he gets to work. He said he has a meeting at 12, so I guess meets with coaches, and they talk about baseball, I guess, right?
Yeah, they talk about the strategy.
Right.
And yes. Go over the relievers and starter who's facing us tonight.
Right.
And the star is a young guy, right? Strider, I think his name is.
Okay. Then maybe they pop in Bull Durham and watch that.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Play Stratomatic.
Well, that was great, though, because, you know, it's cool when we were talking about it, you know, during the break that, you know, I think fans see, you know, Rob, you know, that post-game press conference, and it's baseball, and it's just, you know, kind of the, you know, same questions it can be like every night. So it's kind of fun talking hockey and Broad Street Bullies, you know?
Yeah, and I also love learning the story of someone's journey, especially in baseball, where it can happen, you know, here's Joe Girardi. Joe Girardi was a great player, right? And then it was probably easier for him to transition into the coaching realm because of his name recognition. You know, someone like Rob Thompson, who played 3 years in the minors, you know, he's someone that's got to build up that resume and learn on the player development side, learn on the coaching side. And I just love the fraternity aspect of baseball, where he mentioned, you know, he's in the Tigers, coaching the Tigers system. Then he goes over to Russia and he meets this guy. And then he works with the guy. And then the guy's like, hey, why don't you come over to the Yankees? And then that changed his whole life. And then he gets, you know, with Joe Girardi, builds a great relationship with Joe Girardi, you know, for all those years. And then it's just so funny. Then comes over to the Phillies, gets hired as Gabe Kapler's bench coach. He gets fired. Then Joe Girardi comes back. So Joe Girardi comes back into his world. So I love that aspect of baseball.
Well, it's a small community, I guess, relatively speaking, baseball is. But isn't that life, John? It is unbelievable.
Yep.
Because really you go through and it's like, you know, just it's a timing and you're at the, you know, right place at the right time. It's somebody you met and, you know, it's crazy how things work out. It's crazy.
Yep. But let's talk about before the All-Star break.
Yes.
We've had, because I know the Fanatic and you and myself are big fans of a couple bands, because we talk music sometimes on this podcast, but Los Lobos is one of our bands we
all
both
time.
Like, right? And also, we love Tedeschi Trucks. Now, Tedeschi Trucks, Susan Tedeschi, is kind of like, I would say like almost like a young Bonnie Raitt.
Yep,
right? Kind of has that bluesy rock and roll, great guitar player too. She marries Derek Trucks, and I know both of us are huge Allman Brothers fans.
Yes.
Derek's uncle, Butch Trucks, was the original member of the Allman Brothers. Derek, who's, if you ever want to see a video of when he was 13 years old wearing an Atlanta Braves cap at playing at some festival, and he's cranking out Layla on a slide guitar, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, prodigy.
He looks like he was a tiny kid.
I read Eric Clapton's autobiography, and he said, Derek Trucks is the greatest living guitar player right now. So, he's awesome.
I wouldn't argue. And I got to say, those two, so they came to a Phillies game. This is great. So Los Lobos, as you know, I've got to become friends with their sax guy, Steve Berlin, who's also a world famous
from
producer.
This area, right?
He's from this area. He's also a world famous producer. He's worked with tons of other bands, but he is the sax guy for Los Lobos. So I've gotten to know him. Big Phillies fan.
Introduced-
and for folks who don't know, like Los Lobos has been around for over 50 years.
Yes.
East L.A., they did the remake of La Bamba, you know. So
they do the version of La Bamba that most people know. Yes. Richie Valens, they don't even know Richie Valens anymore. It's all, you know, Los Lobos.
But a great band.
Great band. So anyway, they came to a – they were opening up for Tedeschi Trucks at the Man. So we invited them to come to the game. So both bands came to the game. It was great. And here's – so I brought – Los Lobos gets there first, and I said, hey, before the game, I said, do you want to get a picture of the Fanatic? Sure. So I take the band down, and the Fanatic knew, right? The Fanatic knew that Los Lobos was going to be in the building, but didn't know that I was bringing them down to meet the Fanatic.
Right.
So I bring the band down, where we get down to the service level. The Fanatic had just finished up the national anthem. And I knew his route. He gets on his four-wheeler up the right field ramp, then comes down in the service level past the clubhouse, and he pulls around. And again, he was surprised. And I said, hey, Fanatic, look, it's Los Lobos, right? And what does the Fanatic do?
He kind of gave the old whoop-de-doo, John.
He twirls his index finger around, goes, whoop-de-doo. He doesn't say that because the Fanatic doesn't talk, but he gave that look of
tracked up.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, the band is probably expecting, like, oh, my God, it's Los Lobos. Yeah. And you give the Fanatic gives the old whoop-de-doo. Right?
I had to speak for the Fanatic and say, don't mind the Fanatic. You know, he really is excited, and I'm excited to meet you guys, you know.
Right.
So
then the other part of that story is in the fifth inning, Tedeschi Trucks wanted to meet the Fanatic, which is great. How about these big rock and roll stars want to meet the Fanatic? So I, first of all, Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks might be the nicest people, not just celebrities, just two of the nicest people, engaging, and Derek Trucks' brother played for the Phillies Little League team. And they grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. His favorite baseball team is the Phillies.
Yeah.
Like, he loves the Phillies because he was on the Phillies for so long in Little League.
Yeah.
And his dad's a Phillies fan as well. I guess that's Butch's brother, right?
Yes.
So his dad's a big Phillies fan. So I took Derek into the New Era store, and we got him one of those powder blue.
He had a smile on his face the whole time he was here. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. So anyway, so I take it. We're waiting for the Fanatic to finish up the fifth inning. So we are at the front desk where Kelly and Walt sit, right? Front desk of the Phillies. And we're watching on TV because we were going to go down right after the Fanatic routine. Well, the Fanatic was doing a routine of Elton John and was in a purple
long rock jacket kind of. Yeah.
Right, rock jacket. So Susan says, John, what's the Fanatic wearing there? And I said, well, the Fanatic is doing a Elton John impression, and he's, you know, playing a little mini piano because Elton John is going to be playing in concert here in, like, you know, in less than a week.
They're promoting tickets,
right? Yeah, so she says, and she says this in such a matter of fact way. She says, Derek, didn't Elton just text you? You ought to tell him that you're going about to get a picture with the Fanatic in an Elton John outfit. And she said it so matter of factly. And I'm sitting there going, what world am I living in where a person I'm with basically texts, you know, freely with Elton John?
I love that they're talking about the Fanatic. And it reminded me of a story, John, when Elton John came to the Vet. He was doing a concert with Billy Joel. It was one of the first times the Fanatic went out and, you know, he had Billy Joel singing to him, you know, which was great. But a roadie told the Fanatic that Elton John always has these stuffed animals in his limo when he drives around. He's got, like, these plush dolls. And he used to have a Philly Fanatic doll, and and he couldn't find it. Like, coming to Philadelphia, it was a conversation where he said, oh, that mascot, you know, for the Phillies, and where is I usually have that? And he couldn't find it. So the Fanatic actually got a new doll, signed to Elton, Philadelphia Freedom, Shine on Me, Philadelphia Freedom, Shine on Me, signed the Philly Fanatic, gave it to the roadie. The roadie put it, I watched him do it, he put it right in Elton's limo that was on the service level ready to leave, because, you know, they whip these guys out once they're done, you know, their concert, and they get in the car. And he put it right in the limo, right in the back seat of, so when Elton John was done that night, he had his Fanatic doll.
Where do you think that doll is right now?
Probably with about a gazillion other plush dolls in a closet somewhere.
With Mr. Met and every other stadium he played in?
No, but John, that was such a cool day.
That's awesome.
I don't post a lot of stuff on Facebook, but, you know, I had to post those pictures that we took with Los Lobos and Susan and Derek. It was
awesome. All right. Also, during the, you know, it's what did you do during your summer break, right?
Yes.
So for you, you went out to L.A., speaking of stars.
Even before that, because I hung out with Fanatic out in L.A., but before that, it was an unbelievable time in terms of music, because I went and saw Leonard Skinner
down in Atlantic City. And then I went to see Elton John, who was unbelievable, John. I mean, and the place was packed, and, you know, it's last time in Philadelphia, so that was awesome. And then it culminated Sunday at the Mann Music Center. Our boy Jackson Brown. Yeah, and it was
like
awesome.
Your boy.
Yeah, wow. You're a huge Jackson fan. And yeah, it was almost 3 hours, two sets, played everything. No, couldn't play everything, but a great show.
And I saw Sheryl Crow, and the reason why I went to see Sheryl Crow at Parks.
I forgot to ask
was,
you about that.
I'm friends with Sheryl Crow's bassist, right? So Robert Kearns used to be in Lynyrd Skynyrd, ironically enough, and was in a band called the Bottle Rockets. So we went, I went because of him. I haven't seen him in a long time. And I got to tell you, I knew every song that Sheryl Crow. You know, you ever go to a concert that you're dragged by your wife or someone?
She's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're going to know all this. And her new music is good.
Yeah, you forget how many hits she had.
Yeah.
I got to watch, there's a documentary on her. I got to watch that. But so we went backstage and hung out, told stories.
Look at us. It was a great music time off. But yes, I went to L.A. All-Star Game. You know, the Fanatics been to every All-Star Game, John, since 1996.
Does the Fanatics love L.A.?
It felt a little weird being there. And it felt weird for the Fanatic. I mean, I talked to him. He wasn't keen.
Because he likes to be the star? And there's too many stars out there?
No, he just was thinking of, you know.
Dodgers?
Yeah, Ron Say.
Black Monday.
And Bill Russell. Yep. And yeah, all
Tommy
those
Lasorda.
Tool bags. Dusty Baker played back, you know. Yeah. For us. So yeah, he had mixed emotions, but it was cool. You know, he did the home run derby, and they announced all the mascots. All the mascots were there, and the Fanatic got a huge reception, which there were a lot of people yelling at the Fanatic, hey, you know, Tom Lasorda wants to see you, you know, so he got a lot of that in L.A. And then he worked the red carpet, and that's more the Fanatic speed, you know, he belongs on the red carpet. He did that Tuesday, and then he got a chance to go to the game Tuesday
So
night.
Which celebrity was the Fanatic most excited to meet out in L.A., whether it's baseball or whether it's music? Because I know there's a celebrity all-star game out there. So there had to have been some celebrity that the Fanatic met that was excited to meet.
I'm trying to think. It was he didn't have too many runs in with celebrities,
no,
John,
really?
As a matter of fact. Yeah. Yeah, the players, yeah, not even really. Sometimes the Fanatic will interact sometimes with the players before, before the home run derby, but not as much this
time.
The
Fanatic didn't even pay homage to Albert Pujols or anybody?
No, because, you know, he was on the red carpet before the players came through. So, it was a weird year that year because you would think, yes, it's in L.A. and you're going to see stars everywhere. And, he didn't run into too many
stars.
Well,
I got to say, I saw the list of the celebrities, and that's when you know you're getting old. When we had it in 1996, you know, we had LL Cool J. We had all kinds of, like, big celebrities that we knew every one of them. Now there's so many celebrities that are, I guess, you know, maybe they're influencers.
I was just going to say.
Or they're DJs.
TikTokers.
Or they're on some TV show that, you know, on Netflix that I don't watch. And, you know, so it's, you kind of start to feel old that you don't know who the celebrities are anymore. They're playing the softball
game.
It's
a little odd. And, having Kyle Schwarber out there, I was going to ask Rob, I wonder what he thought. Like, you know, it was certainly Kyle Schwarber's decision to be in the home run derby. But, it could mess up your swing. And I wonder if, you know, Rob, like, had an opinion in terms of secretly he probably didn't want Schwarber to participate in that.
Well, I'm sure he's glad that Wheeler or Nola, who definitely should have, had their numbers to make the team.
For sure.
I'm sure he's really glad they didn't make the team.
Yeah.
And you're probably right a little bit. And I think Schwarber, I don't think he laid down for Pujols, but, I think.
Yeah, if you're going to lose, the way he lost was perfect.
Right. Let Pujols.
To Pujols.
Yeah. Not that he let him, but. Right.
Yeah. I don't think so. But, well, it was a good time. That's it. And it's weird, John. The All-Star game is like a week later. So we're already, heading into August here. So.
I know. And you know what? We're going to have Alumni Weekend coming up. And it's going to be a big, big weekend with, we're going to have a Coca-Cola Mike Schmidt replica ring.
On Thursday.
World Series ring on Thursday. We're going to have a Dan Baker tribute on Friday.
Okay. Yep.
We're going to have Bake McBride and Ron Reed.
Wall of Fame.
Going into the Wall of Fame.
Saturday.
And on Sunday, we're going to have the 1980 and on the other alumni with special guest.
Yeah, Pete Rose is going to be here, John. That's
a
big deal.
Toyota sponsors the whole weekend. The good news for us is that there's going to be a lot of potential guests for us to get We might have to knock out a bunch of. I'm thinking maybe Marty. We'll try Marty Bystrom, some other guys.
So. Yeah, Marty. We'll get to talk to Marty.
We'll
in a
get
while.
Into the lot of that 1980 talk. So
for sure,
looking forward.
All right,
to it.
Let's. We have something to look forward to, John. Awesome, and some more wins.
More wins.
Come on, baby. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and I guess we'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.